some interesting topics on the agenda. Before we start, let me introduce Rika. Rika is our new board member from Japan. I think it's the first time we have her here in GPF.
Hello, everyone.
And secondly, we have Marie Claire. Marie Claire is taking over the support from staff for the GPF. April has to do a gender consultation, so she is not longer available for GPF. But I think Marie Claire, welcome. And if you have any issues, please contact Marie Claire. Having said that, I think we don't have any new members from the GPF. And therefore, Christoph, anything to say up front? Or otherwise, we go straight into the agenda.
I think we have a lot to say on the individual agenda topics, so we can jump right into it.
Okay, thanks. Then give the floor to Michelle.
Good morning. So in this session, I'm going to try and give an update of the ISB's projects, but avoid the projects that we'll be talking about later in the consultation. I'll try and answer questions as we go through, so if you've got anything, do just shout at me. So in the first section of the presentation, I've tried to give an overview of the projects the board is working on at the moment. So on slide three, I've headed it Amendments Expected in 2019, and I can honestly say that title is now completely wrong because we have issued the IBOR amendment. So that is an amendment that gives some temporary relief to IAS 39 and IFRS 9 to support preparers and companies during the period of uncertainty around the IBOR changes. Later on in the meeting, we're going to discuss phase two of this project. The classification and classification of liabilities as current or non-current, we've moved that to Q1 of 2020, so it won't come out this year. The board has approved due process requirements and has set an effective date of 1 January 2022. So that's a clarification that when you assess whether something's current or non-current, it's based on the rights at the reporting date. So I had a quick look when I was putting this slide together, and I noticed that for some time we've been saying there'll be a period of calm. I know 2019 isn't really a period of calm because you've got leases, but in 2020, the amendments that will become effective are the definition of a business that the board issued at the end of last year and the definition of material, both of which are supposed to be clarifications and to support the application of those standards. And the IBOR reform will be effective next year. The conceptual framework will also be effective, but I doubt that there's many instances that you go to the conceptual framework. So from in terms of actually preparing accounts, I think next year will be a bit quiet, but you'll see from another slide as I go through this session that it's not going to be quiet in terms of consultations. So slide four lists the exposure drafts that are out for comment. The amendments to IAS 17 have now closed for comment, and we expect the board to start looking at the feedback in October to that exposure draft, and then updating the references to the conceptual framework is also closed. And then the two other items on that slide, the deferred tax and the accounting policies disclosures, we're going to look at later. There are a number of exposure drafts out for comment. I think most of these we've discussed. I think probably the most significant step is the one on property, plant and equipment, which is the proceeds before intended use, which I think is one of those items that only arises occasionally from my experience, but when it arises, it's always been difficult to know quite what to do. So the board are going to go ahead with the exposure draft, although they're going to put a couple of modifications into the exposure draft, which is that an entity should apply AS2 in measuring the production cost for those items that are before intended use, and also that an entity discloses the sales and costs when those proceeds arise not from ordinary activities. So I think it will be Q1 2020 when we'll see that amendment issued. And then slide six just lists out other projects. We're going to come on to those later on.
One quick question on slide 5. The onerous contract says decide project direction in September. What is decided in December?
So there wasn't a complete decision in September. There was the first phase of the summary of feedback that the board discussed, and the board have got some further feedback to review, but at this stage they were up.
But there was a decision that we go to the direct cost. What kind of cost would be included in the onerous test? And it was this direct cost proposal. I think the board confirmed that decision.
Yeah, it was to confirm what was in the exposure draft. So no changes there. And then slide 7, the research projects. In fact, this says early stage research projects, but for provisions and subsidiaries that are SMEs, those are really coming to the end of the research phase, and we took advice from the advisory council on moving those projects to the standard setting phase. On the subs that are SMEs, we took that to the board last month in terms of we divided the research into two questions. If we did it, would people use it? And can we do it? And the board looked at the, if we did it, will people use it? And the feedback is generally positive. And then at this month, we'll be asking the board to look at some of the proposals that we would make around the disclosures. And the board also had a first discussion on extractive activities last month, where it was really looking at the scope and where it might take the work. It's going to continue its research with national standard setters at this stage on that project. And then slide 8 is the slide. I know this slide well because it took a long time to agree with people. And I think I could probably write it with my eyes closed. So it shows the consultations that we'll be undertaking next year. It was a slide we used last week at the conference we had with world standard setters to really highlight the number of major consultations that would be coming about next year. I think most of these projects we're going to discuss. I'm not proposing to dive into any of them. The project I thought we would just look at was the disclosure initiative, because as we come up to sort of reporting season, I thought it would be good to just outline what the board has done and is doing in that area, and it's not on the agenda. So on slide 12, I have I've put together a summary of the two active projects and the things that we've already completed. So slide 13 looks at the things that we've already done. So there were, back some time ago now, the amendments to IS1, which were supposed to sort of remove some of the barriers around materiality and to help. Slide 2, then we made a number of proposed amendments to IS1 and IS8 to help around materiality. The board has also got out the case studies, which looks at and provides some examples of improved disclosures and sets out the principles of effective communication. And then the fourth section I put there were some of the materials, and I noted that Nick Anderson had published a few articles on. Some of them are focused on investors, but I think they're quite useful in looking at disclosures and what investors find useful. And then in terms of the targeted standards level review disclosures, the board has had quite a few discussions and quite lengthy discussions on these, the two standards. So if you remember from the Principles of Disclosures project, the board decided to take two standards and look at the disclosures in those standards and see and talk to investors and users and preparers about trying to improve those disclosures. So one of those standards was IS19, and on slide 14 there's a summary of what we heard from investors was that they wanted more information around the cash flows, they wanted better communication about defined benefits, they didn't always understand the breakdown around the cost. And then on the other side, we heard from preparers, actually some of these disclosures are quite difficult and they can be quite onerous. So in September, must have been July, the board made the decisions, some tentative decisions on the defined benefit plans, and I've listed those key decisions on slide 15. So some specific objectives about understanding the components and the amounts that make up in the notes that make up the amounts in the primary financial statements, a bit more information around expected future cash flows, information around investment risks, and I think time period over which the payments will continue, so the duration of the liabilities, and then information on the actuarial assumptions. And then the other standard the board is looking at in depth is IFRS 13 fair value measurements. So in July, the board looked at what they'd heard from users. Again, many users said that they start taking a big picture, and that a lot of the information that they get around fair value disclosures is quite detailed and they don't use it. So last week, the board discussed disclosures around IFRS 13, and they came up with two high-level disclosures, which will be about trying to capture information that enables users to evaluate the entity's exposure to fair value measurement, and so that I'm focusing on the significant risks of those instruments. They also came up with they're listed in ISB updates, some disclosure objectives around IFRS 13. And then in terms of other large projects that we're looking at...
Michelle, before we go to that, on slide 16...
Yeah.
The box pretty much in the middle, expressed concerns about the application of materiality to IFRS 13 disclosures. Could you help me understand what users meant with that?
So I think users said that they got a lot of immaterial information, so a lot of information that was... Because in the level 3, they get quite a lot of information, but those disclosures are not material given the level of assets that are at level 2.
Okay, so it is from the user side rather we're getting too much information that we think is immaterial, because you could have read the other way around.
No.
Preparers don't provide enough information based on the notion of materiality, but it's rather they think less would be better.
So there are two messages. There is one, I think, more from the non-financial institutions. And then users saying we're getting too much information, which is not material because the positions are not material. But we get all this kind of detailed disclosure required by IFRS 13, and companies, entities which are not financial institutions don't apply materiality judgment on that. Second message was maybe on the financial institution was more... They have all the information is material, but it is too aggregated. We need more disaggregation, and we need more information on level 2. I think that are the key messages. And what we want to do with this money, you know that, it is a kind of the changing the way how we make disclosure requirements more objective-based, and what we're trying with these two projects.
Okay, thank you.
And we're starting with users. We have started with user needs, because that is angle, and then if we have done that, I think we... do more consultations and with preparers and others.
Yeah, I think this is a project that will come back.
Okay.
And I think we discussed the goodwill and impairment project at the last meeting. I can't remember if by then the board had made the decision. So slide 18 just summarises where the board is and that we will issue a discussion paper. I think actually now that discussion paper will be Q1 2020. Slide 19 just summarises...
Sorry, on 18, can I just ask for clarification on what you mean by more useful information? So where's the emphasis? Is it more useful information or more useful information?
So slide 20, if going forward, jumping forward, looks at some of the disclosures of objectives that we will be putting into the discussion paper. So they are focused on what were management's objectives for the acquisition, what metrics will management use to monitor those objectives, and how will you monitor the progress in subsequent periods. So I think we've had... I'm pretty sure we've had discussions about that. I'm not sure that you were that warm to the discussions.
Yeah, but we discussed it, I think, last joint meeting with the ZMAC. So it's kind of, what kind of information is more useful and what should we provide? Yes. It was a joint meeting with the ZMAC.
Yeah, I didn't send the meeting. I was just asking for an update. Yeah. And I think it's...
No, no, it was not.
I think it's more disclosure is probably where you're currently at. I know that you're also looking at...
Looking at more useful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it's
our purpose.
So I think the discussion paper will give an opportunity as well for you to highlight areas that you think, if we're putting these in IFRS 3, might not be needed. So I think there's a recognition that there's a balance needed.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe on slide 19, and apologies if that was discussed in the last meeting, present total equity before goodwill.
Yeah.
So
it'll
be a line.
Yes.
Readers can't do it themselves. That's why the preparers need to do it for them. But number one, I'm questioning the usefulness of such a measure. Some people may find it useful, but there are thousands of measures that some people might find useful. And in particular, if it's a measure that can be easily calculated based on the information given, why is it useful to make the math for the users, or is it to promote a KPI? Because otherwise I wouldn't understand it. I understand if it is KPIs that the reader cannot calculate, but this appears to be a very simple one. Take total assets, deduct goodwill, and then calculate the ratio for equity. So what's the purpose of requiring the preparers to do the math for the users for this one and not for the 500 other KPIs that users use?
It is to highlight that, because some people are concerned because goodwill is a kind of specific asset, let me say it in this word, right? And if you come, for example, to liquidation, I think there is not much worse in it and you cannot sell it. It's a kind of different thing. And some people are concerned because some companies, entities, they have goodwill is very high, and even if you is maybe higher than equity, and if you would deduct it, there's nothing really left. And therefore, we have the proposal, the discussion paper, because also we have had some presentations where especially quantitative-orientated analysts don't look into details and taking this equity as it is a kind of tangible equity and others, and therefore I think it would be a kind of discussion paper, a custom discussion point in the discussion paper. Is it useful for users if we would highlight that? And what is the equity after deducting of goodwill, because goodwill is a kind of specific asset? That is a proposal. And clearly for discussion is not, I think, that. And getting input in that, because, as I said, we had here users, which also from academics saying, okay, that many quantitative analysts don't distinguish the kind of book value of equity. They're making kind of calculation market to book and don't really recognizing if some goodwill is included or not. And therefore, some board members thought maybe it is a good idea to highlight that. And clearly, calculation can done is also difficult, because another proposal is that the goodwill is now also presented separately from other intangibles, also on the face of the balance sheet.
Because honestly, I haven't heard of the principle that disclosures are supposed to fulfill the purpose of highlighting things. So far, it was always disclosures.
It is presentation.
No, it's disclosure.
Okay.
And so far, I understood disclosures are to provide information that is incremental to what the primary statements. Now, if the purpose of disclosures is to highlight things, even if it can easily be calculated, I think we can put another 100 topics on the agenda of fulfilling this principle. But wouldn't it be better to first discuss whether that principle should be a principle? And I don't know, I don't think it's in the framework or elsewhere. So whether first discuss the principle before applying it. Sandra, you had it up in...
I was confused by the comment. I wasn't sure if it was in the disclosure of the acquisition or if it was to present a contra equity balance in the financial statements because of the word present. that. I was just confused by the phrase, and I wanted to get clarification.
I have not understood what you mean. Is it by?
Is this in the note regarding the acquisition itself, or is this after the acquisition reflecting your goodwill as almost like a contra equity?
It is not by acquisition. It's a kind of general disclosure, what is the total amount of goodwill, and then, okay, what is an equity deducted, this total amount of goodwill, not by specific acquisition.
But as it doesn't say disclose but present, it's the idea that in the future equity, as presented on the face of the balance sheet, will
I think
be equity before goodwill?
My understanding, it is presented. Therefore, I said it is not disclosure. It is kind on the face to think, okay, what is the kind of amount of equity excluding goodwill?
And that would be the equity on the face of the balance sheet.
Oh, there is one position in the face of the balance sheet, which is then before total equity is a kind of equity.
Oh, you would do total equity before goodwill
and after.
And deduct goodwill, total equity.
After goodwill.
Interesting.
As I said, it is a proposal. I think there was some discussions, and we're happy to get input from you guys. And there are other proposals in this, and I think it is a kind of, maybe it is not so important if we go back to amortization. Maybe then it is not, people are not so concerned about this goodwill number. So I think it is dependent on different things which are discussed in the discussion paper.
And the discussion paper is, as I said, due out in Q1 of next year. And the idea is it's going to be very balanced because of the narrowness of the board's views on the two topics. And so the paper will contain a number of preliminary views, and undoubtedly we can come back and discuss those.
When you say do not reintroduce amortization of goodwill, is that a proposal or a tentative decision?
A tentative decision. So what it was a board discussion, and there was a light majority not reintroducing amortization. But that will be the thorough discussion in the discussion paper, what are the pros and cons of reintroducing amortization or not.
Okay. So you were discussing amortization of goodwill in the paper, but your current position is do not reintroduce.
That was a tentative decision by the board. It was 8-6 in favor of not reintroducing amortization.
What is the reason for that? I would like to know.
Sorry?
What is the reason for not the people opposing to the reintroduction of amortization? I would like to understand why.
There are many arguments, and you can read it in the discussion paper. I think we don't have time to discuss today all the kind of arguments, why and why not, because otherwise we... This is always people are interested in goodwill reintroducing, and we can take a whole day, but please wait for the discussion paper, and then we clearly will have at the GPF meeting sufficient time to discuss it again.
If I could just add to what Martin said, I think the discussion paper will have a complete, comprehensive list of arguments on both sides, and people will be invited to send information.
Okay, so the next project I had in the update slides was FICE. So the key point I wanted to raise was that the board's now concluded its review of the feedback that it received on the discussion paper, which was generally that there was support, but the proposals were seen as quite a significant change. In the last board meeting, so looking at slide 24, the board had a discussion about which of those approaches it could take to the next steps in the project. And what the board has decided is to acknowledge that IAS 32 works well in the majority of cases, so to go with having some targeted improvements to IAS 32 that clarify the underlying principles and maybe provide some application guidance. So slight move away from the more broader changes from the discussion paper and a more narrow project going forward. So I did have a session on exposure drafts that are out for comment, but given the time, maybe I'll just go quickly through what we were... So the board has a an exposure draft on deferred tax related to assets and liabilities arising from a single transaction. So this is really leases where you have the asset and the liability or decommissioning costs. And what the board is proposing is to narrow the scope exemption so that it wouldn't not apply in those instances, and the entity would recommend both, would recognise both a deferred tax asset and a deferred tax liability. And that exposure draft is still open for comment. And finally, I just flagged that on slide 29 that WHO had published earlier this year a article on sufficient time for implementing agenda decisions. So this really just tries to communicate the board's view about agenda decisions and the voluntary changes that arise from the agenda decisions. So does anyone have any other questions?
Dean. Very sure. I missed the chance. Can I just take you back to slide 15 on the disclosure initiative? Slide 19 is employee benefits, but if I look at this, this is just defined benefit pension plans. Is the proposal only to look at the disclosures on DB plans and leave the rest of IS 19 unchanged?
So what we heard was that investors focused on the disclosures around defined benefit plans. So I don't think we've heard significant feedback on other areas, but I can check for you.
And we have done a lot of outreach with users, and that was a focus of their interest. Yeah. And therefore, I think the focus of us defining the disclosure objective is also with that, but not forgetting anything else. So that was a kind of priority what users' interest was in.
No, I understand. I mean, when people talk about IS 19, they assume it's the pension standard, but it's actually...
It has all the termination benefits and everything, yeah. But I think because this was the focus and what the team heard when they were talking to users, this is where they focused. I mean, I guess if you've got something else, we could always feed it into the team on another area.
Yeah, and it's been done before.
Okay. Any other comments, questions to this update?
Maybe briefly on the NIFRIX. There is or was a project to amend IS 8, and it had to do with NIFRIX, if I'm not completely wrong.
Yeah, so that project is accounting policy changes, so it's shown on slide 5.
But where does that stand?
I think the board have decided, the board was looking at it in two parts, and if I've got this right, Sue's in the room, so I know if I get this wrong, she's going to tell me. The board, on those first agenda decisions, the board has decided not to go ahead with those proposals. Is that right?
Because that was my impression, and we earlier discussed it, but nobody could say why the board decided this way. So what was it? Were there negative feedback on the ideas?
On the exposure draft was quite complex, and I don't think people were particularly warm to the proposals.
Yeah. I think we haven't made a formal decision, actually, on whether we're going to proceed or not with that, but the feedback was certainly at best mixed and not very encouraging in terms of the idea about the changes for agenda decision-based changes in policy. What we did do, though, was a number of people had commented on the fact that the observation that was in the basis for conclusions in that document, which said that the board thought there should be sufficient time allowed for people to make policy changes, people thought that was helpful. And so we've been trying to elevate that, including proposing to put it in the due process handbook that's out for comment at the moment. But the rest of it hasn't been finished yet, but I think the sense is it's unlikely to proceed.
But wasn't one of the reasons to work on it this notion is a NIFRIC or adoption of what a NIFRIC says, a correction of...
Is it agenda decision?
Sorry. Agenda decision. Is this a correction of an error, which one or two regulators mentioned it would be? I thought that this... to get it out of this corner,
yep.
was a bit the intention. Now, if you don't progress, do you leave it in this corner?
No, so you're right. Part of it was with the messaging on that, and that piece of it where we're trying to make it clear that we actually think that even though an agenda decision is not standard setting, but rather just pulling together existing materials in one place, we're proposing to put words in the revised due process handbook to make it clear that we think that is new information, to signal that we don't think that that means that it gives rise to an error simply because you have to change your policy as a result of some new information that comes from an agenda decision. So we're trying to deal with that part of it in the due process handbook.
Okay. Thanks, Sue.